Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Sophia Wilson, Boat International's Acting Deputy Editor, and here with me this week is Cecile Gowett, Editor of Boat International's US Edition. Hi, Cecile.
Hi, Sophia. Long time no see.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you on the podcast again. It's a bit more of a rarity to have you join us, although I have to admit I've also had a few weeks off the podcast, partly due to our lovely producer Grace having appendicitis, which I know Stuart and Charlotte explained during last week's podcast, which is why we did end up missing a few episodes. And then partly also because I seem to have been weekly commuting to Europe for the past couple of weeks. It's definitely felt like pre-COVID times again.
Back on the plane.
Back on the plane, collecting those air miles is the positive side of it, hopefully.
Great.
But you've also been super busy, Cecile, because you've had the Palm Beach Boat Show.
Right, it's already almost a couple of weeks ago now, but I'm still going through all the information that I've collected there. And I know that maybe Stuart touched upon the show last week, but I have so much good stuff that came out of it, and it was a really, really great show. It was really good to have people from overseas again, not only some of the members of our boat team who came from London, although you weren't here, Sophia, but we had a lot of brokers and shipyards and designers from Europe as well, which is great. And the nice thing about the Palm Beach Boat Show, one of the nice things, is that it seems a little bit more chill than some of the other boat shows. You actually have time to talk with people, which is nice. It's not just boat hopping and, you know, running around. And so I had the good fortune to meet a few people I hadn't spoken to ever or not for a long time. And one of them was the CEO of Ocean Independence, Peter Hartzeller. And we had a very nice chat. We went over a whole bunch of different things. But I will just bring a couple of things into this conversation because it's a refit of two very amazing vessels that we discussed. One of them is the refit of the Abbey King Swath that used to be called Silver Cloud and now called Nurja. And that was a client of Peter's who bought the boat. And it's going in for refit. I love that boat for forever. It's very funny looking, but it has a great story. The commissioning owner was from Palm Beach originally, a very nice gentleman. And he built the yacht for his motion-sensitive wife so they could both enjoy going around the world on their boats. And that's such a wonderful story. So anyway, the boat was sold last year, I think, and to a client that Peter brought. And so now she's going in for refit. And now Peter says nothing major. They love the boat as it is, but just to bring her back to perfect shape.
And did it work? Did it stop the motion sickness?
Definitely. I mean, I took a little ride off Antigua and it's an amazing sensation. It's nothing like a monohull. And then Peter was showing me a video of the boat crossing somewhere in very, very rough seas. And you have this video showing the glass of champagne sitting on the top of... of the deck, absolutely not moving. And then the video spans across to the captain and he's just being whipped around by the wind and the waves are just going crazy. So it's really an amazing, amazing feat, this boat. It's quite something. So yeah, so I'm a big fan of the boat. And then the other boat, very interesting boat that they're involved in is the refit of a boat called Argosy. Do you remember that boat, Sophia?
Yeah, it's a name that I know, and I feel like I should know more about her than I do. So yeah, you've caught me out on this one.
Well, it's a very historic boat. So it was built in 1931 by Krupp for an American banker. I forget the name now. Of course, I try to memorize it, but that's just the way it is. I forgot his name. So anyway, the American banker to delivery of the boat had it for a while, and then it was sold, and then it was a mothership for the sailing yacht Endeavour during the America's Cup. And then the history gets a bit muddy through the war, but it was involved in taking some Jewish people to Palestine after the war. It was seized by the British Navy. Then it ended up in Naples, Italy. It served as a ferry there. And then somebody started a refit and then never finished it. And then it just lingered there, just decaying, as boats do if they're not being taken care of. Fortunately, last year, a gentleman or a lady, I don't know, someone came along and bought the yacht. And yeah, so Ocean Independence is involved in the refit. And Peter says they are really looking to make it a very modern yacht in some respects with modern tech and addressing all the issues with sustainability. So that was very interesting as well. So
wow, that sounds like an amazing story. But yeah, incredible to see what does happen in the end and how that refit turns out.
Yeah, it might take a while, but I can't wait to see.
Yeah, we might still be waiting in a few years' time.
So, but you've been on your side of the pond. You've, as mentioned, been traveling. So I know you were at Damen recently because I was on the virtual presentation, but you were there in person. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was. So I was with Damen, but I wasn't actually at Damen in that we were at a theater in Amsterdam rather than at the shipyard for the premiere of the new limited edition Amels 80. Yeah, it was kind of quite a different experience. It was an incredible show that they put on. I don't know how it was kind of seeing it just fully virtually, but obviously being there in the theatre, we could see all the effort that had gone into the kind of production and the lighting and everything to really make this kind of big splash of the yacht being revealed. And obviously we were there with the team in the couple of days building up to it, and it was really clear what a kind of big milestone it's been. The limited edition series has obviously been such a big part of the Amels brand.
Absolutely.
And we're actually going to touch on that later in the podcast with our data. But yeah, it was really exciting to be there. Obviously Espen was there. And as you saw kind of in the presentation, because they had this, for those of you that haven't watched it, it's still available online to go back and watch. They had a kind of giant model of what the Amels 80 will look like. I think it was 6 meters. So,
oh,
I mean, really.
Wow. I didn't realize it was really, that big.
Yeah. 6 meters. So it's, yeah, really sizable. And I think that was what was great was during the kind of premiere, Espen was able to stand by it and really kind of point out the different parts of the yacht and, you know, his thoughts behind the design. And it just came to life so much more than those, obviously, those smaller models that we're used to seeing at Monaco Yacht Show or something like that when there's obviously an unveiling. And I obviously got to interview and speak to everyone kind of after the event as well. And something that really stuck with me was that kind of challenge of something like the limited edition series, where you're not designing either exterior or interior for a specific client, but you're kind of trying to think about a pool of clients in mind. And Espen spoke a lot about how effectively the Damen family were the clients, all the ideas they bounced, you know, they bounced off Rose and her sister, and it was kind of a real family collaboration. And I mean, it looks amazing. That I just love that beach club with the 3 points of access, and having the tenders stored forwards just means there is so much space to play with. But yeah, I don't know what your thoughts were from a digital perspective, Cecile.
Well, it was a very sleek presentation. We got quite a lot of information. I feel probably not all the information. I guess they want to reserve some of the surprises for later. But I thought it was impressive. I agree. I like the exterior styling. I think Espen mentioned that it was traditional, but it's also very modern. And those big windows. And yeah, the beach club and the... and the glass bottom pool, that looks pretty amazing. And I really quite like the presentation that Paul Costeris at Sino did as well on the interior. It does look very luxurious, but very smartly done in a way that it can be adapted to different clients while keeping the overall theme. So yeah, it's going to be a nice one. For sure.
Yeah. And again, talking to Paul from Sino afterwards, I think he really loved having so much space to work with. I think he really enjoyed, you know, from a design perspective, there was lots of space, there was lots of light. I know, again, one of his favorite areas was the beach club. And I don't know whether you saw in the presentation that kind of at night that can be turned into a full cinema room.
Oh, wow.
Which was kind of a nice sort of like flexibility touch as well. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. They've obviously got one already in build. And I know that they're hoping to have another few clients signed up in the near future. So it'd be great to hopefully 2025 is the time when we'll see the first one of those hit the water.
It's amazing to see those limited editions to get so big. I mean, you know, in the past, you'd think 80 meter would be a, you know, fully custom yacht. But now people want, you know, larger yachts, and they still want that convenience of a, you know, something that's been planned ahead and probably a little bit of a shorter delivery time. So they should do
it. I guess maybe that security of knowing that it's kind of tried and, it's not tried and tested yet, but that, you know, it's not just you going out on your own kind of
venturing. Venturing on a very narrow beam.
it was exciting, and it was great to be there, even though it was a digital event.
Cool. Very nice. So, well, clearly we have just us on the podcast today. Stuart is away. So
he is. It's the women are taking control in his absence, which means hopefully there'll be less talk about fried chicken on this podcast. But I know, Cecile, there is another all-female endeavor that has caught your eye recently.
Yes, right. Actually, very interesting. This is not a typical, super yacht-oriented story. But this is a project that's getting a lot of attention and a lot of support from the super yacht industry. You probably have heard about it. So the organization is called the Maiden Factor. It's an organization that was started by a famous British sailor, Tracy Edwards, that supports the global education programs for young women and girls who have limited access to education. Tracy Edwards herself is phenomenal. She's got a fantastic story. She was just 26 years old when she became the captain of an all-female crew on her 18-meters sailing yacht called Maiden. And they did history by becoming second in the 1990 Whitbread World Round Race, which is absolutely a grueling event. And thus far, nobody thought that female athletes or sailors could do any good in this race. And they won two of the stops, and of course became made history with this. So anyway, Tracy has been very interested in fostering a better education and better access for women, having proven herself that nothing is truly impossible if you set your heart to it. And she came across the Maiden, that boat that they were sailing on in 1990. Many years later, it was in very poor condition, and she got involved with the same group of women to restore it and bring it back to life. And then she got this idea to use the Maiden as this flagship to go around the world and encourage young women to join education and take on the world and prove themselves. And of course, it's used as a fundraiser and raising a lot of awareness, which is really wonderful. So I think it was in 2018 that the boat left Southampton. They have the goal of reaching like 40 destinations worldwide. And the reason why I'm bringing this up today is because the boat is arriving at the end of April in Miami. There is a group of people in Miami that was doing a fundraiser on May 2nd. They will involve the broadcaster named Jennifer Valopi and an American sailor, Newberry Moore, excuse me, and a group of yachting women, as well as a Seakeeper Society. So they will honor Tracy and, of course, use the event to raise funds for the organization. And I think it's a really wonderful story and a great goal. If you want to know more about the story, there are two books about Tracy Edwards and how she became this amazing sailor. And there is actually a video, movie feature that was made in 2019 called Maiden. That really got a lot of traction, attracted a lot of viewers. And we have a story on boardinternational.com, actually.
There you go. No, it is, as you say, I think particularly that, the film that was made really kind of caught people's imagination and brought to attention, what she'd done. And now this next project that she's been part of sounds incredible as well. So, yeah, hopefully you might be able to make it down there on May the 2nd.
I'd like to. Yeah, and anybody else who's interested in the Miami area, the tickets are available for sale. So,
Well, speaking of impressive women, I have to mention one of my other European trips that I've been on, which was to the Monaco Yacht Club for the Castle of Yachting event, which was a couple of weeks ago now and was held as part of Monaco's Oceans Week. And a real highlight of the day, or actually probably a bit of a career highlight for me, was that I got to hear Sylvia Earle speak.
Oh, wow. Yes.
And I knew her by reputation, but I'd never, seen her speak in person. For anyone who doesn't know Sylvia, she's a marine biologist who's now in her mid-80s and has just spent decades exploring and understanding and trying to protect the world's oceans. She was just the most fabulous speaker and managed to get that kind of perfect balance between highlighting the severity of the situation in terms of global warming and, the issues we face, which I hope most of us are aware of by now, but also being really positive about the change that we're all capable of making. I'm trying to persuade her to come on the podcast, so fingers crossed, you might be able to hear from her soon.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, apart from Sylvia, as I said, was a real highlight of the day. As usual, it was also great to be back seeing people face to face again. And I also got to meet the odd podcast fan, which is always nice, including Vrypak's Marnix Hoekstra. I promised I would give him a shout out, so we'll give him a test on how loyal a listener he is now. But yeah, it was great to see lots of people and catch up. And there were, yeah, lots of interesting conversations throughout the day. Monaco also announced that it was going to try and become the capital of advanced yachting. And as part of that, that's all about how they can improve their sustainability, while also, you know, obviously continuing to be a leader in the super yacht sector.
Yeah, they have made a big commitment to that for several years now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And sticking with it.
Yeah, it's important. Obviously, Prince Albert was there on the day as well. And they also held the Voyager Awards that day, where they recognised three different yachts that have kind of gone above and beyond, both in terms of exploration, but also what they're doing on board. So one of the yachts that was awarded was Gene Machine, which obviously I know you've done a lot with, Cecile.
Yeah, and the good fortune of missing that, of meeting that crew and the owner. Wonderful, wonderful people. Very active.
Yeah. Now, obviously, all of these fun events that we've been out and about at have kind of continued to take place in the shadow of the horrific scenes that we're seeing in Ukraine. And I know Charlotte and Stuart clearly spoke more in depth last week about the impact that this was having across the kind of super yacht industry as well. But Cecile, I know you've also been keeping an eye on some developments this week.
Yeah, it continues to create some wave, for sure. Earlier this week, the Spanish Interior Ministry, working with the U.S. Department of Treasury and the FBI, boarded a motor yacht called Tango in Palma de Mallorca. Although the ownership is not fully available, I mean, the yacht, as very usual for many yachts, not just Russian-owned yachts, there is a company that owns the yacht that is registered in the British Islands, and it flags the Cook Island flag, so, you know, there is no real clear link to a particular owner, but they suspect it's somebody close to Vladimir Putin. So they're working together, and they boarded the yacht with the purpose to look for documents that would prove the ownership. So that continues. And then later in the week, last week, I saw something on the Financial Times, and they seem to be intent on outing the Russian owners of yachts around the world. And Antigua Barbuda said they would, you know, work with the British government if they gave them the authority or provided the legal framework to go investigate the ownership of two yachts that are currently docked in Antigua. And presumably the Financial Times got a tip from some of the yachties in Antigua. But again, you know, the yachts are owned by shelter companies that are registered in the British Virgin Islands. So it's, number one, extremely hard to prove the actual ownership of a yacht. And second, you know, whether these people are part of sanctions or not is to be determined. So it's a lot of, you know, challenges. It's very murky waters. The legal framework is hard. And you know, I completely understand the sentiment of the world trying to want to, you know, come to the rescue of the Ukrainian. But whether this is the way to do it, I don't know. But anyway.
Yeah, it's very hard. And, you know, even being involved in the yachting industry, it's very hard to understand what is going on. So I can understand also why mainstream journalists are getting things wrong or getting the wrong end of the stick, because it is such a complex situation.
Yeah,
with many different factors and many different levels involved.
Yeah. I do understand the interest, obviously, and you know, and I empathize to a large extent, because yeah, it's a completely different situation. I mean, it's a war, so.
Yeah, it's interesting times, and I think it is. You know, there's lots of different facts on the industry, but the main thing is that the industry is under the spotlight like it never has been before. And I think it will continue to be. And that isn't necessarily a bad thing, but that is going to require some changes and some involvement in how the industry is perceived and how the industry speaks to mainstream media and is handled, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, definitely. For sure.
Anyway, we'll leave that there for this week, because as I say, I'm aware that Stuart and Charlotte spoke about it a lot, and I'm aware that lots of people are spending lots of time speaking about it. I do have one more final piece of housekeeping before we move on to the news for this week. And this is, I just wanted to flag that the People and Skills Survey presented by the Superyacht Recruiter in collaboration with Boat International has just been launched. So the survey is focused on shoreside rather than crew and captains. So we're calling on brokers, managers, shipyard workers, designers, CEOs, marketing, anyone who works in the superyacht industry but shoreside to complete it. I know that something the Superyacht Recruiter CEO, Ed Ewer, is looking to uncover is some of the lack of diversity and also some of the skills gaps that exist within the industry. So it'd be really interesting to see what comes out of it. I don't really remember there ever being anything like this that was kind of cross-industry, but not kind of captain and crew focused, much more kind of shoreside focused.
No, right. You're right. I don't think it's been addressed quite like this before. That's very interesting. And we'll definitely encourage people to take that survey and watch our social media channels. We'll be promoting that. And it will be very interesting to hear what comes out of it.
Yeah, so it's a quick survey. I think it's about 5 to 10 minutes. It's on the Boat International website. It's on all our social media channels. It's also on the Superyacht Recruiters website and their social media channels. And you've probably seen it already about 10 times on LinkedIn, because hopefully everyone's sharing it. But please do take the time to fill it out, because I think it will be really interesting to see what comes out of it.
Right. Yes.
So moving on to the news, Cecile. I believe you have the first piece.
Do I? Okay, yes, I do. All right, so this week we had a delivery. The 71-meter Fetchip Cypria Juice was spotted off the coast of Spain after leaving the shipyard. The Fetchip has a design by RWD and was built for a repeat client of Fetchip. According to Fetchip, the owner has worked tirelessly with the designers at RWD to ensure a refined exterior flow with soft lines and distinctive creases. All unnecessary elements have been removed to generate an elegant yet masculine look. I have to agree, from looking at the profile photo, it looks like a very attractive yacht. What we haven't seen is the interior, and the interior is by Peter Marino.
Are we ever going to see the interior, Cecile? I feel like you normally know better about me than all the
I hope so. It's been challenging lately. And Peter Marino has done a couple of very interesting yachts, but his work has not been shown very much. So fingers crossed.
Okay. All right. So the next piece of news we have is the Italian shipyard Tancoa signed a contract for a 52-meter custom yacht. The project was designed in collaboration with Vitruvius Yachts and has been commissioned by a Canadian owner. Exterior design and naval architecture has been led by Philip Briand, and the interior will be courtesy of FM Architecture. Built entirely from aluminium at the Tancoa shipyard in Genoa, the project aims to be extremely efficient and will be powered by hybrid technology developed in partnership with Siemens. Delivery is due for spring 2025, and the build joins the 58-metre T580, the 45-metre T450, and the 450-metre SS01, all of which are being built at the Tancoa shipyard at the moment. So yeah, busy time for the yard by the looks of things.
Yeah, that's great. Very good for them. Okay, so we're also taking a first look at the 160-meter Lursen Project Blue, which started sea trials. This 160-meter, it's huge. I can't even put my head around it. Project Blue has left the Lursen shipyard in Bremen and is en route to the North Sea to begin sea trials. By the time this airs, it may already be there. I don't know. The yacht was launched in February of 2022, and it's expected to be the fourth largest yacht in the world when it is delivered. Details of the displacement motor yacht have been kept tightly under wraps. The bigger, the more discreet. It always amazes me. Throughout the construction process, so very few details have slipped out, except that the designer is said to be Terence Disdale inside and out. So far, the yard has revealed that Project Blue has a beam of 22 meters and an impressive interior volume of, I'm going to have to take a breath here, 15,320 gross tons. That sounds huge, but actually it's similar in size to the 156-meter Dilbar, which has a volume of, 15,917 gross ton. And that Dilbar was delivered by Lursen back in 2016 and was designed by Espenoino International and which designed for the interior.
Yeah, so when Project Blue was launched earlier this year, the data that we did that week on the podcast looked at kind of GTs and the difference essentially between the longest yachts in the world and the biggest yachts in the world. And I think the main takeaway for me from that was just how much bigger yachts are becoming, because they just have these, you know, not only are they incredible, you know, 160 meters is obviously very long, but also just the volume that they're offering as well.
Yeah, that's incredible.
I mean, when you start thinking about how many other yachts can fit inside Project Blue, it just makes my head explode. She is just vast.
Right. You know, very many years ago when I started yachting, I was working on the other side with a broker. And they, you know, people would call to ask about a 80-foot Mangusta as a tender. And I used to laugh. I thought it was funny until I found out that, no, that's totally possible. And now we have tenders that are way bigger than this because the yachts themselves are huge. So, yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how big the tenders are on Project Blue. Yes. I imagine fairly large or numerous or both.
Probably. The garage must be quite something.
Right, well, finally, we'll move on to the data, which, as ever, is brought to you by Boat Pro, the superyacht industry's leading market intelligence service. So following the presentation of the new Amos 80, which we obviously spoke about earlier in the show, we thought it'd be an interesting opportunity to look at some of Amos' history and where the brand is at the moment. Just to note in this, we're kind of looking just at Amos rather than at Dahlman Yachting as a whole. So we've excluded the Sea Explorers, for example, from the data that we're talking about. So starting with their history, Amos delivered their first superyacht, the 48.2-metre Catalina, now Lady Georgina, in... Do you care to have a guess, Cecile?
Whoa, that's a toughie. Mm. That's a good one for a trivia, the yachting edition. Mm. You know, if I ever knew it, I think I forgot. Would you clue me in?
So 1982.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But the group wasn't then actually bought by the Dahlman Shipyard Group until 1991.
That's right.
And then in 1995, another milestone moment came about when they launched the 75-metre Montcage. Is that how you said it?
Yeah.
Yeah? Just check. I have a terrible habit of butchering yacht names, so I better double check.
That's the way I've been saying it, but that doesn't mean it's true.
And she remained as the Amos flagship for an impressive 22 years, which is actually a really long year, more than two decades.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in 2016, she was overtaken by their new flagship, which was 83-metre Here Comes the Sun, which is actually now 89 metres because she had a stern extension.
That's right. She was extended. Wow.
In her last refit. So fast forwarding from that to 2022, and the yard has five projects which are scheduled for delivery this year, including the first Amos 60-metre, the seventh hull in the limited editions 242 series, and a 78-metre custom project, which is also being designed by Espen. All three of those have already been launched. They've also announced that they have an order for a 125-metre project called Signature, which is again another Espen design, and that is scheduled to be delivered in 2025. So in total today, Amos has delivered 74 yachts, which equates to an equivalent of 4,266 metres overall in their time. And it just, the brand just seems to be growing. So between 2005 and 2014, they delivered 23 yachts. But between 2015 and 2020-21, they delivered 22 yachts, which with those five that are expected to be delivered this year, they're already way going to exceed this decade, what they did sort of in the previous 10 years before that. The limited edition series have obviously played a large role with the brand's growth. So the first limited edition was 53-metre Denneke, which was delivered in 2007. And since then, they've now delivered 43 yachts in the limited editions range, including 40 of the limited editions 180, which was obviously incredibly popular.
That was amazingly successful. Yeah, I wrote that stat in the article and I had to like triple check it because I thought, wow, really?
Yeah, I didn't realize it was as many as 14. That is, yeah, a huge number. And delivery of the first yacht on the limited edition 60 series is expected this year. As we mentioned earlier, she's already been launched. I really love the look of her, actually. I don't know what you think about her, Cecile.
I do like it. I like it. And the first one has a different color hull, which I think is very attractive. I do hope we get to see it sometime this year.
Properly.
Yes.
Another one on your list, I'm sure.
That's right.
And there's already 5 holes in that new series sold or under construction. So, it looks like it's going to be another hugely popular series. And as we've mentioned, the first 80, unfortunately, we won't see physically until 2025, although I imagine that will probably come around quicker than we're all expecting.
Yeah, right. This year is almost half over. Not quite, but...
Wish it away. It's only April, Cecile.
Okay, good. All right, good. It's just we're working so far ahead with the magazine that I never know what time of the year it is.
No, it is only April, but yeah, we will be at Monaco before we can blink, because that's just the way that it works.
It really is. It goes fast.
Well, I think that's all we've got time for this week. So thanks for listening. The podcast has been mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen. Cecile, you'll be back again next week for the boat briefing with Charlotte, I believe.
I'll come up all warmed up.
So I'm back in France again, but I'm on holiday, so I can't complain.
Have a great time.
This is my choice. Before then, make sure you tune in on Monday for the Big Boat interview, where Charlotte caught up with Richard Sykes, who's the owner of the classic Bonetti Odyssey III.